Hello and welcome to episode 27 of Celiac.com Podcast Edition. In this episode, we talk about the mechanics of malabsorption, C-section and celiac disease, Scott Adams and Ron Hogan live on the radio, celiac history, how your intestinal bacteria can alter your gene expression, and gluten-free camping. Celiac.com Podcast Edition is your regular update on news and important topics from our website. Please leave a comment on our blog or write to the Podcast Edition directly. Our email address is podcast@celiac.com. Celiac.com Podcast Edition is sponsored by the Gluten-Free Mall. Since 1998, the Gluten-Free Mall has provided safe and convenient online shopping for people on restricted diets due to celiac disease, autism, ADHD, or other health reasons. The Gluten-Free Mall has the best prices and selection of gluten-free, wheat-free, casein-free, and other allergy-related health foods and special dietary products that you can find on the internet. Here's a special offer for our podcast listeners. If you shop at the Gluten-Free Mall between now and August 31st, 2010, use the word podcast in all small letters and get a 10% discount. Here's how you do it. When you're ready to check out from the Gluten-Free Mall, you'll see a coupon code box next to your total. To get your 10% off, make sure you write the word podcast in all small letters. This does not count for shipping or taxes, limit one per customer, and offer not valid with other specials or promotions. Now, the news. The mechanics of malabsorption, diarrhea, weight loss, and malabsorption represent the major clinical presentation of celiac disease, but the exact mechanisms of these symptoms are not fully understood. A team of researchers recently set out to determine whether celiac disease impairs the function of solute transporters and aquaporins. Aquaporins are proteins embedded in the cell membrane that regulate the flow of water. They're known as the plumbing system for cells. Solute transporters manage the transference of molecules across the cell membrane. The results of the study show that people with celiac disease have defects in their primary pathways for water and solute absorption that may play a role in the onset of malabsorption symptoms. C-section and celiac disease. A recent study at the Hanover Medical School set out to determine whether or not cesarean section birth might cause celiac disease in children. It's known that people with inflammatory diseases like celiac, Crohn's, and ulcerative colitis have a different mix of bacteria in their intestines. It's also known that the method by which a baby is delivered can affect the bacteria mixture. Scientists in this study wanted to find out if children with celiac, Crohn's, or ulcerative colitis were more likely to have been born by C-section. Their results demonstrated that of the groups studied, celiac children were indeed more commonly born by C-section. The other four groups had no more than 19% born by C-section, and the study does not advocate avoiding cesarean births. The scientists are only calling for larger studies and more data before any scientific conclusions can be made. Scott Adams and Ron Hogan live on the radio. Scott Adams, founder of Celiac.com, and Ron Hogan, a researcher, author, and chief contributor to the site, took part in a radio program last week to support Celiac Disease Awareness Month. Radio host Deborah Bove interviewed them on her radio show called Love by Intuition, and the show was broadcast live from Boston, Massachusetts on 1510 AM, a progressive 50,000-watt station, reaching five states locally, and also on Energy Talk Radio in San Francisco. In total, the radio station can reach over a million listeners. Here is a bit from that program.
Personally, I had a bleeding kidney, and I really attest that to the celiac, because with staying on the strict diet and doing some holistic healing, I've actually been able to heal that on my own. It's a glorious thing. So for the listeners out there, I know there are some that already are aware of celiac. Can you, let's get into the controversial piece of it, because there are some physicians that may state that you're not celiac if the blood test comes through positive, but yet if they don't see any damage in the esophagus, then is that considered gluten sensitivity, or is it actually celiac?
There's actually several parts
Yes.
To the issue that you just raised. First of all, the damage that is diagnostic for celiac disease is in the intestinal wall,
right,
in the small intestine just below the stomach. Many pathologists are not yet up to speed on reading the biopsies, so that the biopsy will, to them, not appear to be celiac disease, because the MARS system, which has been around since the late 80s, has not been fully adopted yet. That's one thing. Another thing is that part of adopting, following the MARS system, means that the pathologist has to work a lot harder counting intraepithelial lymphocytes, and some of them are resistant to that.
And why is that?
Why is that? Well, yes, it's a lot more trouble, and some of them are, there's kind of a dismissive attitude in some ranks of medicine, saying, oh, well, it's just celiac disease. So, and you know, I'm not sure I can explain that dismissive attitude, but it is there. The newer approach to diagnosing celiac disease is one of identifying another set of antibodies that's found in celiac disease. One group is called the endomysium antibody test, and the other one is called tissue transglutaminase test. We're lucky up here in Canada because we can get a home test for transglutaminase. We just need to mail in or contact them by email or through their website at celiachometest.com, mm-hmm, and we can get a test kit sent out to our home.
Wow. Now, what... Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to just throw in there that I think that's going to be the, that's going to really revolutionize things if we can, down here in the United States, get access to the home celiac disease test kit. Because it's, you know, eventually what will happen is the price to get diagnosed. And for anyone who doesn't have health insurance, and I think we all know that's a vast number of Americans,
sure,
they could theoretically go out and buy one of these test kits and at least know that they're in that category of someone who's mounting this immune response to grains and consider a gluten-free diet or consider going in and getting further tests to get diagnosed.
And now for some popular topics from celiac.com. Celiac history. May is National Celiac Awareness Month. Most people think celiac is a modern-day ailment, but humans have always had an irritation to grains since the dawn of agriculture. In the first century AD, Aretaeus wrote about the celiac affection. He named celiac disease coeliacos, derived from the Greek word for abdomen. In his descriptions of celiac, Aretaeus stated, "If the stomach be irritative of food, and if it pass through undigested and nothing ascends into the body, we call such persons celiacs." In the early 19th century, Dr. Matthew Bailey observed a chronic diarrheal disorder causing malnutrition and characterized by a gas-distended abdomen. He also made note that some of his patients appeared to benefit from eating only rice. In 1888, Dr. Samuel G. found that to regulate food is the main part of the treatment, and the allowance of farinaceous foods must be small. In the 1920s, Sidney Haas successfully treated children using a diet that eliminated all bread, crackers, potatoes, and cereals, and consisted mainly of bananas, called the banana diet. In 1953, Dr. William Carroll Dyke wrote that the ingestion of wheat proteins, specifically, were the cause of celiac disease. His example was the bread shortage in the Netherlands during World War II. During the bread shortages, the health of child celiacs improved tremendously, and once the Allied planes began dropping bread to the Netherlands, the children quickly deteriorated. The biopsy test started in the 1960s, and in the 1980s, the medical community first acknowledged a correlation between gluten sensitivity and other autoimmune diseases. This article comes to us from celiac.com's Journal of Gluten Sensitivity, Spring 2010 issue, Bacteria and Gene Expression. Whether a full-blown celiac or gluten sensitive, one's immune system has been overtaxed due to the presence of gluten in the diet. Such an overburdened immune system is unable to be as vigilant as a healthy one, and as a result, it allows such organisms as parasites, amoebas, or bacteria
to infiltrate the body. The population of organisms found in the intestines of celiac patients, on a gluten-free diet or not, is different from healthy control groups. The ratio of good bacteria to bad is reduced whether celiac disease is active or inactive. According to some studies, good or bad bacteria can influence gene expression. This means that a person whose immune system has managed to tolerate gluten for many years might suddenly lose tolerance if their genetic makeup should change in a way that causes the formerly quiet susceptibility genes to become active. If this idea is correct, celiac disease might one day be prevented or treated by ingestion of selected helpful microbes. Gluten-free camping. The warmer weather is here and it's time to go camping. Eating gluten-free while camping is very easy once you know what to bring and what to avoid. To grill gluten-free food, either bring your own or use the grill at the campsite, but cook on a layer of aluminum foil or a pan to avoid gluten contamination. There are even special racks with ridges to place on the grill to keep food safe. So here's a tasty hamburger recipe for you to eat while you're camping this summer. All you need are gluten-free hamburger buns and a pound of lean ground beef or turkey, gluten-free Worcestershire sauce, 1 tablespoon of potato starch, 3/4 teaspoon of salt, and 1 teaspoon of black pepper, and pack them however you like them. Grill them up. Top with green curly or romaine lettuce, fresh tomato, red onion, pickles, and cheese. And for dessert, s'mores. Use gluten-free graham crackers, of course, and marshmallows. Those are also easy to find. Do not forget this campfire treat. First, put your marshmallow on a fire-safe skewer. Toast it over an open flame until it begins to brown and melt. Then break the graham cracker in half. Sandwich the chocolate between the cracker and the hot marshmallow. Allow the chocolate to melt and the marshmallow to cool a moment before eating. Then, perhaps, top your s'mores with fresh or grilled strawberries. And that's all for this episode of Celiac.com Podcast Edition. Remember to look at our website for full articles on everything you heard in the podcast and from Celiac.com. Thank you for listening.